welcome to the podcast. My name is Thomas J. Sotvet.
And I'm your co-host, Vicky Sotvet.
So that means you've come across Scaredy Cats, the rootin', tootin', slashy, vroomin' edition.
Slashy doesn't rhyme.
Slashy vroomin'.
That's not a word.
I couldn't find, like, another rhyme, so I thought if I snuck it in between rhymes that you wouldn't call me out on my shit, but
no.
Here we are.
No, I'll call you out, don't worry.
And now I'm embarrassed.
Well, that sounds like your own fault.
There goes my career as a rap artist.
Because you have one of those as a young white man in IT.
I did. But alas, it was for naught.
So Thomas, tell me, what movie are we watching this week?
Well, first I'm gonna lay something down for you, okay?
Okay.
The osteotome. Do you know what that is?
No.
So the osteotome is a metal instrument designed to cut through bone and is still used today in plastic and dental surgery. In 1830, a German physician named Bernard Hein invented the chain osteotome, which was operated via crank.
Telling me the history of chainsaws?
Yes. This device was also used for surgery. While the exact origin of the chainsaw is unknown, many believe that the chain osteotome is where the tool came from, because it's essentially just a small hand-cranked chainsaw. Just, it was later repurposed for cutting wood. Of course, with today's movie, we will be revisiting its original purpose, because we are watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's not doing surgery.
No, he's not, but he's cutting people up. Which was the chain osteotome's original purpose, was
to cut people
up. Sure, but you're still cutting up bodies, is what I'm saying. Surgeons cut up bodies? Yes, that's literally what they do.
You can't say it's the same purpose, though, which you just did.
Okay, if you take it down to its, like, barest minimum function, it is designed to cut through bone. That happens in this film.
Well, then.
So there you go. So we are watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre today. Before I hop into some facts about the film, I'm going to ask Vicky what Vicky knows about the movie. So, Vicky, what do you know? What do you know about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Presumably there's a chainsaw and people die, and it's in Texas.
Well, that's all you got.
That's it. That's all I got.
Right? All information that could easily be gleaned from the name.
Where do you think I got my information from?
I first came upon this movie when I was a kid, wandering around Blockbuster. And I was a weird child. I was like 4 years old, and I always went right through the horror section, and I would just like stare at the VHS movie like art and just be scared. And that was, every time I went to Blockbuster, I went and I did this. And the Texas Chainsaw Massacre one always jumped out to me because it was just brains. The entire VHS. Whatever copy they had of it, it had no name on it or anything. It was just like a box that looked like brains. And you would have to take the VHS tape out, and that was where the movie was actually written. And I remember as a kid being so curious, and I wanted to rent it so bad, but Mom was like, no, here's Aladdin, or whatever the hell I was watching at that time. But I wanted to watch the Texas Chainsaw Massacre so bad. And so I sought out this movie pretty much immediately as soon as I was able. It was like the second or third horror movie I ever watched once the censorship kind of came off. And I didn't like it when I was a kid. I remember watching it and being like, I don't get it. I was expecting so much from this mysterious, like, brains art. But no. But I rewatched it as an adult, and it has since become a favorite of mine. So the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was directed by Toby Hooper.
Is it T-O-B-Y?
It is T-O-B-E.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, well, I was going to call you out and be like, Toby, really? But yeah, I don't know how that
is. I have no idea. Toby or Toby Hooper, who also directed Poltergeist, which is another fun movie that we'll be covering eventually.
Is it about a poltergeist?
Man, you're so good at this. It's also produced by him. And it is written by him and Kim Henkel. Kim also went on to direct The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, which is the fourth in the series, and a very strange film. It stars Marilyn Burns as Sally Hardesty. She's also in a few cameos throughout the series, such as a mental patient tied to a gurney in The Next Generation screaming. We have Alan Danziger as Jerry. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre was actually his last role. He didn't act after that. I don't know.
Because he was killed by a chainsaw?
Presumably. That's exactly why he stopped. And then Paul A. Partain is Franklin.
That sounds like a name from Jersey Shore.
Right? Partain.
Paul A. Partain.
Partain.
That's the whole name, though. Paul A. Partain.
Paul A. Partain. Yeah, you're right, it does. Or it sounds like a drink. So he's Franklin.
Paul A. Partain.
It better be a drink somewhere. He's Franklin, and he also appears in The Next Generation as an orderly in the same mental hospital. So it was weird that, like, the entire old cast kind of, like, randomly had weird cameos. I don't know. Street's a strange film. We also have Gunnar Hansen as Leatherface, the titular chainsaw-wielding psychopath of this film. And he is also in tons of cameos throughout the series. Of course, if you're the OG, you're going to appear a lot. But he's in a ton of cameos.
Wait, is this the villain that looks sort of like Scarecrow?
Kind of, yeah.
The, like, leathery, like, stitched together?
Yeah, he's got a mask made out of people face.
Ew.
Yeah.
Why would you make him ew?
To look pretty.
Ew.
You get all the best bits and construct the perfect face.
No.
No?
No.
Well, all right.
No.
Never show you that collection of mine.
I'm sorry, but if I ever open our closet and just find, like, a face collection, we're getting a divorce. That's not... No. No. No.
So, the budget of the film is estimated, I think... I couldn't... Again, this is another one that a lot of sources couldn't agree on it for some reason. Estimated to be about $300,000, but I've heard that it could have been a lot less. And considering what the movie is and how a lot of the stuff was, like, done by... the people on set and stuff, I wouldn't be surprised if it was less than that. I've heard it described as a shoestring budget, which makes me assume it was less.
Well, to be fair, $300,000 to make a whole feature-length movie is a shoestring budget.
But recall that Halloween was made for way less.
No, it was made for like $300,000.
No.
That was the number you told me in our podcast.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, box office worldwide is estimated to be about $30 million. So, good return anyway.
It made its money back.
It's pretty infamous, so I would be shocked if it didn't make a lot of money.
Incidentally, I've just Googled it, and yeah, Halloween was $325,000 US.
All right, well, I'm a liar. And I'm not a great rapper. Man.
You're a liar, you're not a good rapper. What do you have going for you?
I don't know.
Cat dad?
A face collection.
No, I don't have a face collection.
So, some factoids about the film. The idea for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre has many inspiration credits, but the real inspiration actually came to Tobey... I'm just calling him Tobey, because that's way cooler. Tobey Hooper, while he was Christmas shopping, he was frustrated by some crowds, saw a display of chainsaws, and was like... I know a way I could get through this crowd very quickly. And then later that night when he was back home, he didn't kill anybody.
I like how you felt the need to specify that this accredited director who later made a movie did not in fact murder anyone.
Well, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, but I presume if he murdered someone with a chainsaw, he would be in prison forever and we wouldn't have this film.
Unless he killed everybody and was never caught. Anyways, later the inspiration for the film came to him while he was sitting at home, apparently all at once. He just immediately knew exactly what every single scene was going to be.
Wow. That sounds like a good talent.
Good strike of inspiration. Despite the movie's claims that it's a true story, it is not.
I'm sorry. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre claims it's a true story?
Yeah, it does. It opens with, like, this is a true story, blah, blah, blah. It was meant to be very, very, like, ooh, people saw it. But it's not based on a true story. It is influenced by the murderer, Ed Gein, like a great many spooky horror villains are. But, yeah, it has no root in truth.
Listen, anybody who digs up his dead mother's head, makes a shrine to it, and then starts... making furniture out of people is going to inspire a lot of films.
Totally. It's always been funny to me, though, because he wasn't really, like, a notorious killer of many people.
Well, as far as we know he for sure killed at least one person.
Yeah.
And he definitely did grave robbing.
Yes.
We're unclear about how many other people he murdered, because there probably was a few.
Yeah,
but
probably.
His whole house was human furniture, so we just don't know.
Which you'll definitely see the inspiration for in this movie.
Oh, great. I'm so excited for human furniture.
Woo! The chainsaw used in the movie is a real chainsaw. However, the chains were removed. But it was real. Revenant people, and he was swinging it around above his head, so fun times.
Can a chainsaw hurt you if it doesn't have a chain on?
Probably. Probably still.
Like, can it cut you?
No.
Because I presume if you hit somebody with a chainsaw, it'll fucking hurt.
It's going to hurt because they're giant. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's still, like, it's a big motor, and it would be freaky, so...
No, it would be freaky. I was just wondering about, like, did they get a complaint from the union about safety? It was a real chainsaw.
I don't think this movie had a union. So, that's really all the factoids that I had for it. But I did want to say that, like, this movie is... interesting. It can be interpreted a whole bunch of ways. It has had a huge cultural impact. Even if you don't realize it, it has influenced a lot of different stuff. Depending on who's watching the movie, you can take away different messages from it. There's giant, like, theses written about this film. The Wikipedia page for it's really long. It's very art house, though. So, like, when I watched it when I was a kid, I didn't like it because it was very art house. It wasn't the horror film I was expecting it to be. But I do recommend that people go and watch this one before they listen to this episode, before we break it down in part two, because it is a interesting movie. And I think that everybody should experience it. I don't know. That seemed kind of weird to say, but it's just one of those films. But anyways, that's my two cents on it. And that is our part one with the factoids and whatnot. So we will see you guys in a little bit, or you'll listen to us in a little bit when we finish watching the movie when we come back with part two.
Unless I, of course, find a face collection in Thomas's closet, in which case... you will not hear the end of this podcast because I'll be in divorce court.
Or part two will be just me.
Are you implying you're going to kill me with a chainsaw?
No. No, no, no.
Because that'd be rude.
I don't own a chainsaw. Anyway, we'll be right back with part two after we go watch the movie. So stay frosty out there. Welcome back. So we just finished watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That's my best chainsaw
noise. That was so bad.
I don't go around making chainsaw noises.
You're clearly not the best at killing like Grandpa is.
You're right. I have killed exactly zero people.
Grandpa's the best at killing.
He's not.
He's really bad at it in the movie. So yeah, we just watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like I said. And... for those of you who do not normally listen to our podcast, this is the point part of the podcast where we are going to spoil the film. So if you don't want it spoiled for you at all, then go watch it and then come listen to this. I suggest you watch it, though I wanted to say again, or say that upon like viewing number four, I think this has been for me now. Even though a lot of the violence is implied, I can see how it would make some people uncomfortable. Again, though, why are you fucking listening to this if you are going to be uncomfortable by horror films? But if you're the type of person that's going to be uncomfortable by implied violence, then maybe don't watch this movie. But if none of that matters to you, then go watch it and then listen to this.
Or
but,
listen to us and then decide if you want to watch it.
That's true. It's true. I don't know.
You're not presenting them with all their options, Tom.
It's true. I'm sorry. But, like, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the type of movie that I feel like people could hear about, and then they go watch it, and it's different. It's different than what they expected. Because it's a weird movie. Speaking of weird films that we're going to be talking about, do you want to take us away?
Yeah, so it starts with text rolling up the screen and a voiceover dramatically talking about how it is a real story.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's not.
Nope.
Oh my god. Do you know how everyone would know about it if it was the real thing that happened?
Yeah, the narration is done by a young John Larroquette.
Who, by the way, pronounces idyllic wrong.
Yeah. How did he say it?
Idyllic.
Idyllic? Did he say idyllic?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. But
because it's my first note is that he pronounced it wrong.
But you know what? It actually does serve to set the tone of the film. Like it,
the voiceover or his pronunciation?
The voiceover.
Yes.
It does a really good job of making us feel like what we're about to watch isn't necessarily a movie, if that makes sense. Like, it is a movie, but it's definitely an art house film. And I feel like the voiceover does a really good job starting us off on that mood. Because it's not quite the same as, like, a Star Wars type of text open.
Well, Star Wars also doesn't read it out loud.
No. But, like, it is different. It's almost presented as if it's a true crime documentary in the way the voiceover talks about it. I don't know. It's different. I don't see that done in films often. So
yeah, that's true.
It sets the stage pretty good. I enjoy the opening, personally. Yeah. And then we cut to, I think at this point, a graveyard.
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Nope, not yet. There's this sort of unnecessarily long series of things just being illuminated by flash bulbs.
And you know what? This movie's got a lot of unnecessarily long things.
It does, but it's setting it up almost to be like crime scene photos. Mm-hmm. Like, this is... And at first I thought maybe this was like the victims or something, but then we start getting a radio voiceover, which starts talking about grave robbing, and then it starts panning out to two bodies that have been wired into like a weird statue thing in a graveyard.
You know what it reminded me of? That one killer from Hannibal that does
the
like...
That guy who makes the totem poles?
The like weird totem poles? Yeah.
That's gnarly. Or like Psychopaths?
Totally,
Who makes... Wow, is that just a theme of serial killers making weird body towers? Body Jenga?
Again, Ed Gein inspired a great many things. But I should actually mention, though, that the cold open that is being read way back when we were talking about that, like 3 minutes ago.
Well, more like 30 seconds, but go on.
Yeah, okay. mentions about how a lady named Sally and her brother Franklin would not have even been able to think of the horror that they were about to experience. But it only mentions those two characters in the cold open, and there's a few more than just them, but they're clearly the important ones, which I found kind of funny in the way that Franklin ends up going out. Like, he's just...
Well, I think he's mentioned only because he's Sally's brother.
But and also
we'll
that
we'll
he...
get to him.
And I think he's mentioned as an invalid because he's in a wheelchair.
Yes. That would have been the normal term in 1974.
It was it?
Yeah.
Man.
People refer to people as invalids all the time.
Oh, man. Okay. Invalid?
I can't say it.
Invalid.
Yes, I know. I can't do it.
Okay.
I don't know. It's one of those words. Everybody's got some words that they just can't do.
As you mentioned, we get this radio opening that's talking about some graves in Texas that have been robbed and desecrated, and there's this weird, like, flesh idol thing that's been fused to this one grave, and it's messed up, and there's... It's all bad times.
Yes, and then it starts talking about oil refinery burning in Texas and so on. And there's an undercurrent of oil in the whole film, which is interesting because it was made at the height of the first oil crisis for those of you out there. Or the first oil shock, if you prefer.
Yes. And again, like this, you can make arguments for this movie being about vegetarianism. You can make an argument for it being about the, like, kind of fears of the time, the oil crisis. Like, this movie could actually represent a lot, which is, I think, a lot of the reason why it's been so studied, because it can mean so many different things.
Yes. The kind of random radio voiceover about oil burning and the weather turns out to be diegetic, though.
Yes.
In the van radio, as we slowly kind of shift to the van radio and cars passing to make dramatic noises to increase tension. And so the whole beginning soundtrack is diegetic, and then it introduces us to our characters.
And we should mention that the radio, in addition to talking about these graves being robbed, mentions that people are going to Texas that aren't from Texas to make sure that, like, graves of their ancestors, people that are buried in those graveyards, are fine. So people are flooding these graveyards to make sure that their relatives' graves haven't been desecrated.
Yes. Including our van full of youngins.
Our van full of youngins. So there is Sally Hardesty.
Hardesty?
So she's the only one given a last name. I think it's pretty safe to say that Franklin is... It's pretty safe to say that Franklin is also Franklin Hardesty because he is her brother. And then they are joined by their friends Jerry, Kirk, and Pam. I believe Jerry is dating Sally, and Kirk and Pam are an item.
Yes.
And so they're all in the van. And we open up as the radio kind of fades out to this dead armadillo lying belly up on the side of the road as the van drives past.
Yeah, and... they themselves are going to a graveyard to check if Grandpa's there, but they stop on the way to put some planks down so that Franklin can wheel out of the van and
pee in a coffee can.
Yeah, he pees in a coffee can.
Which makes sense. Like, if you can't stand up.
It does make sense, but, like, watching it happen was kind of like, okay. All right.
Yeah, and then a truck apparently has the world's best backdraft because it drives past, and he goes flying down a hill with his pants perfectly buttoned up and his belt done.
Yeah, so. Again, they were trying to go for that PG rating. They failed. Like, I feel like they were trying to go for it, and then eventually just like, fuck it.
Yes. Anyhow, they make it eventually to the graveyard, and they're like,
oh, and there's like
talk about grandpa.
And there's like a bunch of Texans lying around drunk in tires, and like it's very like the first Mad Max film almost.
Yeah, but in Texas and not the apocalypse.
Not the apocalypse, but like you know what I mean, where you've got like weird people like lying on the side of the road.
They're not as weird as they are in Mad Max.
I don't know. That one guy's just sitting in a tire, drinking and rambling to himself.
That's just Texas.
While all of his friends are like, "Oh boy, is that just Texas?"
They're helpful people. Like, she right away is like, "You want to talk to Becker?" And he's like, "Oh, you go talk to that man. He's the sheriff. You tell him your grandpa's in there, and he'll let you right in. You, Frank, come show this young lady where the sheriff." Like, they're actually helpful people. It's just the one drunk guy in a tire.
Right. He's weird. But so Sally and her boyfriend Jerry go off to the grave. Franklin's upset because he can't go because he's in a wheelchair. And then we don't even get to see the grave. We just cut back to them back in the van driving. And she assuring Franklin that she saw it with her own two eyes and the grave is fine.
Yes, and then we have a really long conversation about how cattle are killed in slaughterhouses.
And also astrology.
Well, the astrology is just kind of happening, but killing cattle is important.
Killing cattle is important, but we do actually get, I believe it's Pam, is reading American astrology. She's reading from a magazine. She keeps talking about how Saturn's doing something freaky, and it's bad luck.
It's in retrograde,
and that's bad.
Do you know what that means when something's in retrograde?
No idea. Soon as anybody talks about astrology, I just tune out.
Retrograde is not actually, well, it's an astrological term, but it's actually an astronomical term also. Retrograde just means from the Earth, it appears to be going backwards.
Oh, okay.
Because back in the day when we thought the Earth was the middle, the way we did it was the planets had these like weird loop-de-loop parts where they went backwards, because that's the only way to explain the motion if the Earth's in the middle. But if you look in the night sky, it does appear planets are moving backwards a certain time of the years in the orbit, and that's when it's in retrograde.
But yeah, so Pam does mention how Saturn is in retrograde and how that's bad luck and how it's bad. And we all know what movie we're watching, so we're like, yeah, Pam.
It sure is bad. Anyways, they talk about killing cows with sledgehammers.
Yeah, Vicky during this film was like, they don't do that in the 70s anymore. As he's like, sometimes they need one whack. Sometimes you need to whack them like three times. Vicky's sitting there like, that's not how they do it. And then he's like, but that's not how they do it anymore. They use a gun.
They use an air gun.
And Vicky was like, oh yeah, okay, never mind.
Yeah, and I was less of that. But seriously, I was like, you trying to believe they're killing cows with sledgehammers in 1974? Really? Did PETA fund this movie?
Grandpa was.
Well, yeah. Anyways.
He's the best.
And then they're like, hey, there's a kind of weird dude hitchhiking. Let's pick him up.
Yeah, well, they're talking about it, and they're like, we should pick him up. And then I think Pam is like, no, he's weird. Don't pick him up. And they just do anyway. And yeah, he's weird.
I'm just saying, if you ever see a hitchhiker, like, you do you, be safe. But if you ever see a hitchhiker and your first thought is, man, that's kind of a weird fucking dude.
And we should
don't.
And we should say that he's weird because he's got a bag of, like, animal skin around his neck, like a necklace.
It's just a whole possum.
It's like a possum that he's skinned around his neck and looks like the most jangly, like, I don't know, Fallout Raider guy you've ever seen. And they're like, let's pick him up. And Pam's like, guys, no. And they're like, let's do it anyway. And then we see that they do pull over and they pick him up. And then he starts off
weird,
but not as weird as he gets.
I don't know. He was weird the whole time.
That's true.
In fact, my first note on him is, I'm rather amazed they did not kick this hitchhiker out immediately.
So this hitchhiker is played by Edwin Neal, and I gotta say, he fucking kills it. Like, he is
You need someone to play a weird hitchhiker.
He's so weird. And, like, the things just how his mannerisms are and how he acts, he does so good.
Yeah, and he starts talking about how he used to work at the slaughterhouse, and then he starts talking about head cheese, which is a real thing.
It is a real thing. But then they're talking about the air gun specifically for killing cattle. Franklin is, anyway. Franklin's talking to him about it. And Franklin mentions about how, well, the air gun's better, obviously, because it is. And the Stitchhiker's like, no. Back when we used to whack him with the hammer, that was the best way.
Although he's not old enough at any point to have been in a slaughterhouse.
No. But we find out later that there's a reason why he might believe that.
I know. I'm just pointing out to the American public that nobody at any time in the 50s, 60s, or 70s was hitting cows with sledgehammers. We had moved past that as a society.
We have, like, one viewer in Venezuela, so it might be the Venezuelan public. Like, the one. Shout out to our one Venezuelan listener, by the way.
The general listening population, I assure you, they are not hitting cows with sledgehammers.
Okay. Anyway, so he starts talking about how, like, that was the best way. Killing him with a hammer was the best way. And then he takes out his camera, and he takes a photograph of Franklin with his Polaroid, and then shows it to him. And Franklin goes, "This photograph sucks." And the Kitchecker's like, "No, it's good. You should pay me for it.
$2.
And at that moment, he really reminded me of, like, people that hang around the Eiffel Tower trying to, like, sell people little Eiffel Towers.
Or the guys in Times Square who want you to buy their rap CD from them
for $5. So they will give it to you and then be like, "Okay, now you owe me $10 or whatever." Yeah.
We had a band trip to New York one time, and I was with two guys, and I watched them just get swindled out of, like, $40 by this group of guys, like, shoving CDs at them because they were too polite to say no. They got to me, and I was like, "Yeah, just fuck off, man. I'm going to the Hershey store, bye."
So, anyways, so they refuse to buy this photograph because, again, this guy's got a whole possum around his neck and wants to sell you a photograph that he just took of you, saying it's real good when it's not.
And so he puts it on some tinfoil, throws some gunpowder on it, and lights it on fire!
And lights it on fire! And they're all freaking out, and they're like, "Oh my god." And then he snuffs out the fire, wraps up the tinfoil, puts it in his possum bag, and then pulls out the straight razor that he's got in his sock and cuts Franklin on the arm randomly. And Franklin, rightfully so, is like, "What the fuck?" And they pull over and they kick out the hitchhiker.
Yeah, which, to be honest, I kicked him out way before then.
And we should mention that the hitchhiker before this takes Franklin's knife and cuts his own hand with it.
Yeah, like, that's so the hitchhiker's point I would have kicked him out.
But again, like, Edwin Neal sells it. So they kick him out of the van, but as they're driving away, he takes his bloody hand and he, like, writes a symbol on their van as they're driving away.
Yeah.
And then does a weird, like, raspberry thing up at the sky.
He's just crazy.
This movie's got a really big thing for raspberries. And I'm not saying, by the way, for everybody out there that doesn't know what a raspberry is, because I'm not talking about the berry. I'm talking about when you put your tongue between your lips and blow, like the thing that kids do. Like, this movie's filled with that.
Yeah.
Everybody does it.
Anyways, the van eventually pulls up to a gas station, which is out of gas. Again, that kind of subtle commentary on the oil crisis.
Yeah, and the fuel guy's coming later. But they, and weirdly, the gas station guy offers, is like, "Don't go picking around no houses that you got no business picking around. Why don't you stay?" Because we actually do learn at this point that not only are they here in Texas to make sure their grandfather's grave hasn't been desecrated, but they're also here to see the old family homestead. Sally and Franklin's old, like, their parents' old house that's out in Texas that's now dilapidated and old. So they're just going to go pick around at its bones, and then they're going to head back where they came from. But the gas station owner is telling them they shouldn't bother. And what's funny about this is there's a guy washing their windshield this whole time while they're, like, talking with this guy about how there's no fuel, and he's trying to convince them to stay. And then eventually they're like, "We're going to go anyway." And he starts to leave. The gas station owner starts to step away. And then they start talking to him again, and the window washer guy starts to leave. But as soon as they start talking to him again and he comes back out of the gas station, the window washer comes back out and continues washing their windows.
Yeah, it's sort of weird.
It's weird, but funny.
Yeah, anyways, they do make it to this dilapidated old house in the middle of nowhere.
Before they do that, as they're driving away from the gas station, Pam, I think it's Pam, it might be Sally, it's one of them, I don't remember, but they notice the blood is on the side of a van, and they're like, "That guy smothered our van in blood.
That was rude of him.
Better not clean it." And they drive off with, like, blood smeared all over the side of their van.
Listen, no one is going to accuse them of being the brightest youngins who ever did youngins.
Yeah, they're not.
Yeah, they make it to the dilapidated old house, and it's dilapidated and old, and there's a weird, spooky colony of daddy long legs making noise somehow.
Yes, they start to kind of explore this old house, and Sally is reminiscing to, Pam and Jerry and Kirk about, I used to spend time in this nursery here. And, like, and this house is clearly, it's dilapidated. Like, it's
the last time she was there, she was 8.
Yeah, it's got no windows anymore. There's, like, leaves and shit everywhere. Like, it's old, abandoned kind of territory.
But there is a random bone wind chime hanging from a door.
Yeah, so Franklin... Is it Franklin that discovers that?
Yeah, it is. Because they just left Franklin outside.
And it's kind of funny because I see all over the place about how, like, everybody thinks Franklin's just the worst. And I'm like, dude's in a wheelchair and his friends regularly abandoned him. I'd be pretty salty, too.
Yeah, his friends regularly abandon him. And then when he's, like, just been fucking stabbed by some crazy guy in their van.
But, like,
nobody's like... Yo, you good? You like, you need to talk about it?
All the analysis of this film is like, and the fact that Franklin is so annoying and needy is totally purposeful. And I'm like, if I was Franklin, I'd be mad too.
If I was in a wheelchair and I got stabbed and then my friends just fucked off.
Like, you're not gonna be wrong. Franklin's a little weird. He's a little strange.
Well, it's sort of implied, I think, that maybe the leg thing was like a birth.
It's a birth
situation.
So there's something maybe
something in his head. Like,
he's a little strange. But like, describe him as insufferably annoying, I would not.
Yeah. Like, I've definitely met more annoying people in my life.
So he's wheeling his way through the house because all of his friends and his sister are upstairs and he can hear them laughing and giggling. And of course, it's upstairs, so he can't go up there. But he wheels into the house and he starts making raspberries up at the ceiling in a scene that's like 4 minutes long of him just slowly wheeling through this house being like...
Well, he's also imitating the laughter because he's been yelling for them and nobody comes.
Right, because he has called for them. And so he's like, hee hee hee.
Yeah, because he can hear them laughing.
But again, everybody in this movie does raspberries. I don't understand it.
I don't know what to tell you.
So he's wheeling through the house and he ends up coming upon a blanket that's got like bones and stuff on it. And then a wind chime that's made out of bones.
Yeah, and he's like, huh, that's weird.
He's like, those homeless people are getting crafty.
Maybe they should sell it at a craft fair.
You know, I bet they'd make money. You do have a... To be fair, I want to go on record here that Vicky was flinching at every single, like, macabre animal display. But Vicky straight up owns a necklace with a raccoon's jaw on it. Whole jaw, teeth and all.
Yeah, but I also don't have, like, couches made of human pelvises.
Yeah, well, we'll get you there.
No.
Baby steps.
No. anyways. What's his face?
I don't know. Who's its face?
Not the boyfriend.
Kirk. Kirk is a boyfriend of...
Yeah, but not the boyfriend.
Kirk is a boyfriend of Pam.
Right. Kirk and Pam come downstairs and they run into Franklin, who's clearly very upset. And they don't say anything. They're just like, hey, there's like a watering hole around you. Where is it?
Yeah, it's really awkward. And again, I just think of like how all analysis of this film are like, Franklin's the worst. I'm like, no, his friends are the worst.
Yeah.
Because yeah, they come downstairs and they're like, hey, Franklin, so where's that like... swimming hole around here that you were mentioning in the car, and he's like, there's a path in between the two old sheds, go ahead.
Yeah, and they're like, hey, great, thanks, we will, bye. And off they go.
And off they go, presumably to skinny dip, because that's what people do in these movies.
Yeah, and so they're skipping around, and then they, like, kind of fall down a hill into, like, a dry riverbed.
And it's clear that now that this is the watering hole, and they make some throwaway comment about how Franklin's always been fat his whole life. Again, just mean. So mean. But then they end up hearing a generator. And they're like, oh, shit, gas. Because they were worried for a while that they were going to run out of gas in the van. Because their plan was to go visit this old homestead and then go back to the gas station. Hopefully it had fuel by that time.
Yes.
But they hear this generator and immediately are like, oh, gas, perfect. And so they go walking through the brush to the neighbor's house. And yeah. They find the generator.
And it looks like a normal house from the outside.
Yes.
And then Kirk is like, oh, we'll go, blah, blah, blah. And he's knocking on the door. He's like, hey, there's a human tooth on the porch.
Yeah.
I'll just give that to Pam. Like, what a funny joke.
Like, as a joke, yeah. He's like, hey, I got something for you. And puts it in her hand. And she's like, oh, God, it's a human tooth. What the fuck? And he's like, it's funny, right? And we're all like, No.
She goes off and he keeps banging on the door, and then the door opens.
Yeah, she goes to sit on the swing.
Yes. And the door opens, and we are treated with, like, it looks like a relatively normal house from this angle, except for the back room, which is painted red and covered in, like, skulls.
And it's weird looking. Like, the sort of, the contradiction of that is cool. I really, really like how it is, you got the stairs, and then this room that is painted bright red that is just lousy with, like, antlers and trophies and things. And you know instantly that something is off about this place. Like, it establishes it so fast with that opening shot alone.
And then just in case you didn't know something was off, you start hearing this weird, like, squealing noise.
Yeah. Does it sound like a cow? I think there's a lot of squealing in this movie. I think it sounds like a cow.
What cows have you ever heard?
Demon cows. And so Kirk goes up to the door and he's like, what? What's going on? And then this guy with, like, a weird skinned-looking face appears in the doorway and with no music at all. And that's one thing that I gotta give this movie credit for, just kind of like with Gerald's Game. It uses music very sparingly.
But I found that unlike with Gerald's Game, its lack of music almost didn't work, because it had, like, all these kind of weird noises. Like, it was trying to have music, but it didn't know how.
And again, this movie's very art house, and, like, it's really hard to explain, but, like, you just gotta go see it. But anyway, so this guy with, like, a weird skin-looking face with a big sledgehammer suddenly appears in the doorway, hits Kirk over the head, killing him.
Well, no, not quite, because it's almost an exact replica of the van conversation where he's talking about how the sledgehammer didn't always kill them right away, so he hits Kirk, and Kirk's, like, twitching out on the ground,
right.
And so they hit him again, and then he pulls the door shut.
And then he drags his body through the door and slams the door shut, and we see that the door to this red room is, like, a sheet metal.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's a really, really, really cool scene. It does a very good job establishing, oh, so this is what the scares of the movie are going to be. It's going to be like this.
Yes, and then
and again, it's no music. It's just like wham, 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 slam. It's so good.
Yes, and then eventually Pam is like, oh, I'm going to go get Kirk.
And we get the most iconic shot of the film that Vicky disagrees with me on,
I don't disagree it's an iconic shot. I just don't think it's the be-all, end-all of movie making.
It's so good, though. It's the scene where we have Pam, and again, she was sitting on the swing. So she is, like, finally like, okay, I guess I forgive Kirk for the tooth thing, and gets up and starts walking towards the house. And the shot starts underneath the swing, and tracks as Pam is walking towards the home from a low angle looking up, showing you the entire estate. And as Pam gets closer and closer and closer to the house gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I don't know, I think it's really good. Anybody who doesn't want to watch this movie, doesn't want to sit through it, at least go to YouTube and look up that scene, because I think it's brilliant. It's so good. But anyway, so she walks up to the, into the house, to look for Kirk.
Yeah, and she's, like, wandering around, everything's normal, and then she stumbles into this room, covered in bones and feathers. And then we have another of these, like, needlessly long scenes, which starts off setting the tone, and by the end is just kind of, like, gratuitous.
But, like, what it does a good job of is, you can see how much detail and care they put into the set, because of how long it lingers on the various aspects of the set. But it does, again, then this movie is filled with overlong shots that if it was a movie, I would be upset. But because it's an art movie, I'm less upset because I'm just appreciating the detail that went into the set. So yeah, she stumbles into this room and it's filled with very, like, macabre furniture.
Tom says macabre, like it's this casual thing. It's like, it's straight up like a couch that's like two strung together, like, pelvises with, like, femurs coming out of it, and then arms, and then there's, like, a skull in the middle,
it's
and
so
there's,
cool.
like, a lamp made out of, like, a rib cage.
That's
and,
so
like,
good. And there's a chicken in a cage that the entire time that there's, I don't think there's any music for this scene. It's just her looking around, horrified at all the things she's seeing, and this chicken in a cage up above her going,
making chicken noises?
Chicken noises! It's great.
Yeah, and I gotta say, y'all, Tom was way too fucking excited about the bone couch.
I want one. No. I want one so bad. No. So she's obviously a little bit...
She throws up.
She's a little bothered by what she sees, yeah.
Which I think is valid. If I wandered into a room full of just, like, couches made of dead people, and there's, like, 3 inches of bones and feathers on the floor, and there's, like, 10 human skull lamps, I also probably would be like, nah.
Yeah, and so she throws up, and again, this scene's very long. Like Vicky said, it's like 4 minutes. But she gets up and wanders back out into the main entryway, and we can see the metal closing of the door, and she walks in and she's clearly screaming and yelling, and then the door opens and that skinned-faced guy, who is leather-faced by the way, sees her and starts running after her, and we get another one of the iconic scenes of this film, which is her running out the door onto the porch, but then he comes up behind her, grabs her, and pulls her back into the house as she is doing everything she can to get away. Like, you can say what you want about this film, but nobody phoned in their performances.
No, the acting is very good.
No. Like, she looks like she is fighting for her life.
Which she is, to be fair, yeah. Because he carries her inside and just clicks her right on a meat hook.
Yeah, we see him carry her back through the hall, into the red room, down the hallway, where we see poor Kirk splayed out on the table, quite dead at this point, and Leatherface just, like, lifts her up and puts her on a meat hook while she's screaming and yelling.
And then starts dismembering Kirk with a chainsaw.
But you know what is really impressive about this scene? And I said so, I think, already. But this movie has a lot of really implied violence. Like, we know that Pam is hanging on a meat hook. And we know Leatherface is taking apart Kirk's body with a chainsaw. But you don't see it. It's very, very, very skillful with where it chooses to show the camera, so that you're aware that there's violence happening, which makes you uncomfortable, but you're not seeing it, and therefore it might not make you sick. You just know it's happening, and that sucks.
Yeah, but also, they were on fucking drugs when they were like, no, we can get a PG rating for this, it'll be fine.
No, there was no way they were ever getting a PG rating, but, like, as far as graphic violence goes, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is not graphic. As far as graphic goes, like, there are, like, again, like, Deadpool is much more graphic than the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is insane if you think about it, but it's true. Go watch it.
Yeah, anyways, we eventually cut back to the house, and the other guy,
Jerry,
is like,
Jerry with his sweet hair.
Very 70s hair.
Sweet hair.
He's like, all right, I'm gonna go look for him.
Yeah, he's like, gone a while. I think at this point it's getting pretty late. It's like sundown almost. They still need to go back to the station to go get gas. So he's like, I'm gonna go look for these two guys. And they're like, well, we'll come with you. But it's like, no, you should stay with your disabled brother, probably.
Yeah, probably.
And so he goes, and he finds the neighbor's house. And he walks in, and he ends up finding, inside of the house, Pam in the freezer. And he opens up the freezer, and she's still alive in the freezer, despite being hung up on a meat hook.
I want to point out, though, she's very unconscious, and then he opens the freezer, and, like, 4 seconds later, she's like, which, by that point, she would so badly have hypothermia from being in a freezer, there's no fucking way she's waking up.
Totally. But she jumps out at him, and instead of helping his friend, he freaks out and tries to run away.
Yeah.
But then he turns around, and Leatherface is standing there with his handy-dandy meat tenderizer, and he gets bonked to death.
Yeah.
Bonk, bonk.
And then he just very unceremoniously, like, squishes Pam, who's unconscious again, just back in the freezer and closes it.
Well, I didn't find it I found it realistic and very uncinematic, if that makes sense. Like, if you were gonna shove somebody back in a freezer, that's how you do it. There was no, like, glam, there was no frills, that's how you do it. So yeah, he shoves Pam back in the freezer, and then it's night.
Yeah.
And now it's nighttime.
Franklin and Sally are like,
And they're honking the horn of the van, because, I mean, everybody's gone now, where the hell are they? And they realize that the keys to the van were taken by Kirk, so they don't actually have the keys to the van.
Yeah, and then Sally's like, well, give me the
flashlight,
and I'll go look for them. And Franklin's like, well, I'll come with you. Which is reasonable, because you're in the middle of nowhere with a dilapidated old house. All your friends have just gone missing, and you're in a wheelchair.
Again, everybody's so mean to Franklin.
Right, and Sally is, like, physically fighting him over this flashlight, and finally he's like, fine, I'll just go without the flashlight.
And, like, I might be sounding like I'm, like, everybody's being mean. Like, he is a little difficult throughout this entire film. Like, Franklin is, again, he's clearly got something a little bit wrong with him. He's a little bit more challenging to deal with than everybody, or than anybody else, but, like...
But also, he's... in a wheelchair, yeah. And his friends just keep abandoning him everywhere?
I am very sympathetic to his position. Like, I am very sympathetic.
Like, yo.
So she eventually wrestles the flashlight away from him and is like...
No, she doesn't. She says all right, she's going without
she's
him.
Just
going
to go without it. And he's like, well, I'm not going to let you go without a flashlight and without me, so let me come. And he starts wheeling after her. And this entire film, he's been struggling to get around in his wheelchair because... It, again, it's a dilapidated property with overgrown...
And they're on, like, grass.
Yeah, it's overgrown grass and shit. So, like, he's having trouble making his way around. But he manages to start following her.
Yeah, and she's still storming off, and it's like, bruh, just... Bruh. But, no, it's Franklin, so we gotta treat him terribly.
And then we get a shot of them, and they're going through the bramble brush kind of thing. And she's at this point now pushing him in front of her. And she's struggling, and it's like, oh, your wheel keeps getting caught, blah, blah, and Franklin's just like, push from the bottom. And then suddenly Leatherface appears in, like, one of the only jump scares, realistically, of the film, and kills Franklin with a chainsaw, like, really quickly. And again, you don't get to see it because it's shot from behind Franklin, but Leatherface carves him up, and Sally lets go of Franklin's chair and begins one of the longest chase sequences of all time.
It was like 5 minutes. And I'm not even exaggerating.
It's really
like,
long.
She's screaming in the dark, and it's in the dark. She can't even see all this detail, and she like runs through a bramble, and then he cuts it with a chainsaw, and then she runs through a bramble, and then he cuts it with a chainsaw, and then she has to stop because her hair is stuck, and then she runs through a bramble, and then he cuts it with a chainsaw.
And like, it's good. It's just long. And that's the thing I can describe.
It's good for the first, like, minute. And then the remaining, like, 4 minutes, you're like, yes, I understand. She is running away in the bramble from a man with a chainsaw.
A ton of this movie I can describe as good but overlong. But the weird thing is, I don't feel like they were trying to pad runtime. I think they actually just thought that it was meaningful to keep these scenes going for as long as they did.
It's not, but...
So anyways...
Nice to pretend.
So they chase... all around, like, they do, like, she does a full circuit. She ends up back at the house.
Well, it's important that she's at the house, actually, because she ends up running upstairs,
mm-hmm.
and she finds these two corpses in wheelchairs.
Yes, and this is the house with the red room and where everybody died so far.
House.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like two corpses. There's an old man sitting in a chair who looks... old. He looks like a vampire that's just come out of sleep.
Well,
kind
he
of
looks
old.
Super dead because he's like he's waxy and like
yeah,
like he doesn't look human.
No, he like, looks old, that old, like a mummy kind of.
Not even like a mummy. It's not like he's like desiccated. It's like this weird thick white.
No, you don't.
It looks like somebody took his face, dunked it in a half inch of wax, and then kind of started peeling this like layer of still soft wax off.
Would you like a bonus fun fact about this film?
Is that how they made his face?
The guy who played that old man was a young guy, and they just had so much prosthetic on him. So she ends up seeing these, and there's this old lady in a chair, and she's very clearly dead. She's like a skeleton with bits of flesh clinging to her still. That's it.
It's very Mama Bates.
It is very Mama Bates. And she runs back down the stairs just as Leatherface is chainsawing through the door, and he kicks the door down, and she has to run back upstairs and just fucking jumps out a window, glass and all, just smash out the window.
And then there's like another 3 minutes of chasing.
And then another 3 minutes of chasing as she runs around the end of the house and runs away from him as he comes back out and chases her. And she ends up back at the gas station, which just goes to show you how long she's been running, because the gas station was a long time ago, and she runs to it.
Yeah, and she, like, busts in, and the gas station guy, I wrote, this guy is not great at calming tactics, because he's kind of, like, forcibly, like, getting her to sit down, and he's like, you're fine, just calm down, blah, 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 and she's, like,
And by the way, like, Leatherface chased her right up until the gas station. Like, he's close enough that you'd assume that he would have kicked open the door and killed both of them at this point, but for some reason he hasn't.
Yes, and that reason is the dude's like, I'll just go get the truck. And then he comes back with some ropes and a sack. And he's like, now just be quiet while I tie you up.
Wiggity-whack, get him a sack.
Yeah, and she picks up a knife and he just like sighs and picks up a broom and with the like bristly end of it just like swats the knife in her head. And then he just kind of keeps swatting her with the broom like she's like... It's like an old lady if a mouse was to, like, scurry across the farmhouse floor.
It is pretty funny. So he kind of, like, whaps the knife out of her hand, and then he starts whapping her on the head, and you're like, haha, it's funny. But then the broom breaks, and it's just the stick, and then he starts hitting her over the head with it, and you're like, oh, it's no longer funny.
Yeah, and but he does eventually get her kind of in a sack.
Like, not, yeah, he, like, concusses her and then ties her up.
Yeah, and then he puts her in a truck and starts driving, and then he occasionally just...
Before he starts driving, he loads her into the truck, gets in the truck, and then in another scene that's sort of unnecessary, gets out of the car, goes back into the gas station, turns off all the lights, and then closes the door and locks it, gets back in the car and is like, gotta make sure I turn off the lights and lock the door.
Yeah, and then he keeps talking to her and just poking her with this stick for the whole drive. All the time, he's just like, poke, poke, poke. Poke, poke,
yeah, and he's like taunting her, and then he starts to pull up this driveway, and we don't know where he's pulling up yet, but we see this guy in the distance who's also stumbling up the driveway, and as he turns on the headlights, we realize that this is the hitchhiker.
Yeah,
from earlier.
They're all just one big crazy insane family.
Crazy insane family.
Because hey, Leatherface is part of the family too.
Yeah, we learn that the hitchhiker is Leatherface's brother, and that this guy that's here is like. Their uncle?
He's related.
I don't know.
In some capacity.
He's related in some way. But he ends up chastising the hitchhiker for desecrating that graveyard. So it's clear...
It's not even desecrating the graveyard. It's doing it while people were there because somebody might have seen him.
Right.
It's clear that the desecration is not
the problem. It's clear this family's got a thing for, like, desecrating remains, clearly.
Yeah, all their furniture is
all their furniture is remains. But... So he starts, like... Oh, man, you're a big idiot for going into this graveyard, doing it while people were there. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. But ends up getting a ride back to the house we see. So it's the exact same house that she just escaped from. And they drag her inside and tie her to a chair and start talking about how it's almost dinner time. Go get Grandpa. And Leatherface at this point is wearing a different person mask that's got makeup. And he's wearing a wig that is so he's clearly dressed up like a lady.
Yeah, and I want to know, does he have, like, a lady face and a dude face? Because it'd be real hard to wash all that makeup off cured human skin all the time.
He, throughout the film, wears three different types of masks.
Oh, so they are different.
Yes.
Puts on his face.
In the different, in the movies, after the first one, they expand a little bit on that.
Ah.
And imply that he might be maybe trans, I think, is something they touch upon later.
Well... I think it's a reference to Ed Gein, because Ed Gein wore, like, a mask made of his mom's face.
Yes.
And would, like, pretend to have conversations with his mother while it was just him wearing his mom's.
Yeah.
He was a
mentally ill man.
Messed up dude.
He was a mentally ill man.
He was real mentally
ill. Again, like, a ton of inspiration for this movie. So they start, the hitchhiker and Leatherface start bringing Grandpa downstairs, and we realize that Grandpa... is the dead old fucking man from the attic. And you're like, they're bringing a dead person to dinner?
And then they cut Sally's finger, stick it in his mouth, and he starts sucking on it and wakes up like some sort of fucked up old vampire man.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird scene. And they're all, like, howling and yelling. And again, like, Vicky and I are actually skipping over a lot of this film because so much of this movie is just, like...
incoherent animal noises while you have 47 shots of her eyeball from different angles.
Yeah, or, like... 5 minutes of her screaming or something like that. Like, it's, again, it's very artsy, not so much movie.
Yeah, and I had to wonder, like, at what point your mind would just totally stop absorbing what was happening? Like this girl has just watched her brother be killed by a chainsaw. She's running, kicking and screaming. She's in the weirdest house she's ever seen. Things that, like, at some point, the human brain would just stop. It'd be like, nope. No, we out.
Yeah.
We going catatonic.
In fact, she's so out that as this old man is suckling on her bloody finger, she passes out. And when she wakes up, she is tied to a chair to whose arms of the chair are literally human arms.
A very fresh human arms, probably one of her friends.
And she's tied to said chair. And it's dinner time. There's the hitchhiker and on one side of the table, Leatherface on the other side of the table, the gas station owner sitting there, and Grandpa at the head of the table. And they're all eating. And as soon as they realize that she's awake, the gas station owner and Leatherface start, like, taunting her and getting in her face and screaming. And again, it's just 7 minutes of this.
Yeah, it's just so long.
And for anybody who's played Resident Evil 7, Biohazard, the dinner scene from that movie is 100% inspired by this scene from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And if you played that, you fucking, yeah, it's the same.
The one thing I do appreciate about the scene is she doesn't look pretty while she's screaming. No. She looks like she's having a straight up not good
time. She looks like she's in a Viet Cong war camp and having the worst time of her life.
I think at that point your brain would just have shut off. I don't think it would be responding.
But she screams for a little bit and then they start talking about how. And then the gas station owner talks about how, like, he doesn't take pleasure in killing, but some things just have to be done.
Well, he doesn't do the killing.
No,
he's just the cook, which implies they're also all cannibals.
Yes.
There's nothing normal about this family.
Of course not.
Anyways, and they're like, well, time to kill you. And they're like, well, we should let Grandpa do it.
Because he's the best at killing.
Because he killed 60 in 5 minutes once. And you're like, 60 cows? 60 people? 60... Daddy Longlegs? I don't know, who knows? Man.
But they, like,
talk. 60
but he is the best at killing. Grandpa is the best at killing.
Yeah, and so, Hitchhiker is, like, kind of trying to hold her over a basin, and Leatherface is trying to give Grandpa a hammer, but he keeps dropping it because he's, like, too weak to hold it.
And it's actually, like, it would have been worse if he just killed her. Or it wouldn't have been as bad if he just killed her. But the fact that it's this old man trying to bash her brains in, but he can't, while they're all like, come on, Grandpa, get her! Come on, Grandpa! And, like, holding her head over this basin. It's a real messed up scene.
Yeah, and eventually the hitchhiker is like, well, you're not helping good enough. So he, like, kind of tries to help.
And, like, hits her over the head a couple times to the point where she's starting to bleed from her skull.
Yeah, but... when Hitchhiker goes to help Grandpa, she's like, I'm out.
He's like, wait a second, I can leave.
And just, well, flings herself out of the second story window.
Again, she flings herself out of the window again.
And it's suddenly morning outside.
Yeah, and so and this makes some pretty cool shots, because it's morning, which means it's light out. And we have the light of dawn kind of spreading over this road as she starts just... running as fast as she can down the road, and the hitchhiker takes off after her, but he's got a knife and he's slashing at her back, but he doesn't seem really intent on grabbing
her. He's clearly tormenting her
while Leatherface comes out. Now, instead of wearing the wig and stuff, he's just wearing a suit, but he still has the lady's mask on.
And he's got a chainsaw,
and he's chasing after him. And we get this long shot of her just running down a road.
Really long chase scene.
But I actually like this one, because it is actually just, like, it's the climax of the film. Like, it's just like, oh my god.
That's fair. I was just so done with watching her long, scream.
Yeah,
while she runs away.
Scream and running away. It's really long. But she's running away, and the hitchhiker's slashing at her back, and she gets pretty bloody by the end of this, as she is slowing down and Leatherface is catching up, and she breaks onto this road.
Yeah, and there is a semi-truck driver, and she manages to get out of the way, and they, much more graphically than I was expecting, run over the hitchhiker.
Yeah, the hitchhiker gets killed by this semi-truck.
Which, I mean, is fair.
Yeah.
I feel that is valid. And interesting point about the semi-truck, it is actually an animal transport truck of the variety they use to transport cattle and hogs to slaughterhouses.
Yes.
And there's nothing in it. It's just very fitting.
It is.
That, like, they keep referencing the slaughterhouse thing.
And so she ends up, the semi-truck obviously stops, and she ends up running to the cab and pounding on the cab, like, help, 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 help! And this guy opens it up and is like, oh my god, and helps her in. But then Leatherface shows up, and he starts chainsawing at the side of the semi-truck. And so they go out the passenger side while Leatherface is chainsawing the driver's side, and they end up running away. And while they're running away, the truck driver of the semi grabs a monkey wrench, and they start running away back down the road with Leatherface chasing both of them now. And by the way, no dialogue is said between the two of them.
There's some screaming, but that's
it. And the driver turns around and throws the monkey wrench at Leatherface, hitting him in the head, and he falls down.
And his chainsaw falls on his leg. It doesn't cut it off, but it does some damage.
It does some damage, and Leatherface starts screaming, and then the truck driver weirdly keeps running down the road while another truck...
But just a pickup
up,
truck.
Pickup truck pulls up on the side of the road, and it's clearly like, oh my god, what have I happened upon? What is going on?
Yeah, and Sally, with great effort, manages to pull herself into the bed of the truck, totally covered in blood.
As it pulls a Yui, barely missing Leatherface, as he's swinging, because Leatherface is slow now, and he's swinging the chainsaw at her. And the final scene of the film is her driving away in the back of this pickup, looking at him, and she starts screaming, but then she starts laughing, and her eyes get kind of crazy, and she's just kind of like, ha 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 ha.
Again, there's a point where you just don't.
Yeah, and then we get Leatherface, who's injured and angry against the rising sun, swinging his chainsaw around and, like, making grunting, angry sounds.
Yeah, Leatherface never says anything, by the way.
No.
He only communicates in, like, kind of noises.
Yeah, exactly. But he's just yelling, he's just grunting, screaming, swinging his chainsaw around again in this suit with this lady face on, with the sun rising in the background, and it's just, it's a good shot.
Yeah,
and then it ends.
And that's it, the film.
It ends at that point. It's a very abrupt ending to a sort of overlong film. It's weird that they chose not to, there's our cat talking about the Texas Chainsaw.
She was also present for the whole film, but I think she napped through most of
it.
Yeah,
I don't think she bothered with any of it. So that was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Kind of a artistic, glorious clusterfuck the whole way through is how I would describe it.
It almost feels like some, like, film student's final, like, project to graduate, and he decided to make a horror film.
And you know what? They would have graduated. Probably top of their class, because it's good. It's just almost not a movie.
It's very art house.
Yeah, like...
It's art house in that way where it's, like, it's almost too obsessed with being art.
Right, but, like, I like it for that reason, if that makes sense.
Was
like,
it almost?
We'll get into rankings and we can talk about it a little bit more in detail. So, speaking of rankings, how much did you enjoy that movie? I guess, well, how well made is what we normally start with. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, how well made do you think that movie was?
Like, 6.5?
Wow.
7?
Wow.
Like, I understand a lot of what they were trying to do. I just don't know that they executed it super well. Like, you're right. I don't think they were trying to pad the runtime or anything with these overlong scenes, but I think they kind of got a little lost in the weeds, as it were, in a lot of them. And maybe, like, yes, they don't have music in the soundtrack, but they have a lot of this weird almost music from the noises, and it's like, I don't know if you were trying to only have diegetic sound, but they come close to a lot of interesting artistic markers, but for me, I don't feel that they really successfully nail them. And that might have just been like the budget. Maybe with more money they could have had a clearer soundtrack, or they could have done more in the chase scenes that made them feel necessary in their artsiness, or
right,
you know, like I can see what they're attempting to achieve. I don't know that they successfully executed on all counts.
Can you see why that movie is so obsessively studied?
Yeah,
though?
Absolutely. I understand.
Okay.
And like I said, I see what they're trying to do. I just don't necessarily feel they execute every time. What about you? What do you think?
I have a weird relationship with Texas Chainsaw. Like I said, when I first watched it as a kid, after, like, lusting after it my entire life and finally being able to see it, I was very let down by it. But I find I always, when I'm watching it, I'm kind of like, meh. But the further and further I get away from that experience, more and more, I'm like, I really liked that. So, like, how well made it is, I gotta go with a solid 8. Mostly because the set design and, like, the effort that they clearly put into the different, like, macabre furnitures and stuff like that are so, so, so good. And, like, the mood is just set so well. And, like, considering the budget especially what they managed to do was great.
Yeah,
and the fact that they managed to, with such a small budget, create something that's so everlasting, and it, people still argue about what it means kind of thing, is really, really, really good. So, yeah. 8.
Yeah, I probably would give it that if it had, like, more money or something. Like I said, I understand what it's trying to do, but I don't feel it necessarily achieves it in all counts. All
right, so now is when we rate how much we enjoyed it. So, Vicky, scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Like a 3? I don't know. I struggled with this one a lot, which isn't terribly surprising given that it's an art house film, because I tend to struggle with art house films. Like, the movie Pi, not Life of Pi with the tiger, but Pi, the black and white art house film about finding Jesus in the stock market or whatever.
Yep.
I cannot stand them. It's way too artsy for me. So, but I fully admit that I don't handle art films super great. I'm not the best critic for art films.
Right. Oh, man. I almost can't rate this movie because, again, it's like two totally different experiences. While watching it, I am experiencing one thing, but, like, the more and more I think about the movie, I start experiencing a different thing, which means kind of overall, I guess I got to give it an 8?
Lots of 8s from you.
Yeah. It's, again, like, I don't necessarily love while I'm watching it. But the further and further I get away from it after watching it, the more and more I'm like, that was brilliant, and that was brilliant, and this was really good, and I really liked this. So, like...
That's fair.
Yeah, I enjoy deconstructing it. But, like, it's not the type of thing that I would casually view for just entertainment purposes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, and I think that's true of most art house films. Like, it takes a very special person to be like, today I'm just going to watch this art film for funsies.
Totally. And, like, so Texas Chainsaw Massacre is not a movie I'd watch for funsies, but if somebody had never seen it before, and, like, I wanted to watch it with them and analyze it with them, and we could just spend an hour after it was over talking about
it. So, basically, this podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. But, like, even casually, then I love it for that exact reason. So, yeah, an 8 for me.
Okay.
So now we talk about how scary it is. So, Vicky, scale of 1 to 10, how scary was this movie?
5?
Wow.
Like, I don't know. Like, don't get me wrong, I thought Gerald's Game was by far scarier, and that just might speak to, like, what things I find scary. Mm-hmm. I found a lot of the movie... Disgusting isn't the right word. I'm struggling with the language I want to use. Like, I found a lot of the movie, like, oh, that's gross. Like, oh, all that... All that furniture that you got there made out of people. Tasty, you know? But, like...
Macabre.
Macabre! Thank you. That is the word I want. I was like, I know it's not disgusting. No. But...
It is a very macabre movie.
It is a very macabre movie.
It's very hopeless.
It is. Is it outright terrifying? Not to me.
Yeah.
What about you?
Like, I don't know. Just what they're able to do with implied violence and the set and the mood that they're able to set. Like, again, hopelessness. Is scary to me. So, like, I would give it a 5. Just in...
I think it's the first time we've ever agreed on a scare rating.
Yeah. Like, a 5 for me, not because I'm scared by it. I've seen it enough times now, I'm no longer scared. But even little kid Thomas wasn't scared by it. But I can see how what goes on in the movie would be scary to people.
Yeah.
I can see how your average viewer would watch that and be like, that was... horrifying.
Yeah, and, like, don't get me wrong, if I ever wandered into a dilapidated old house full of people furniture, I would absolutely be terrified out of my fucking mind. But, like, I was not terrified. I was not terrified, you
right.
know, during the...
Yeah.
During the whole affair.
Alright. Well, that was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It was, and we're bringing things a little more modern next time. Which you may have noticed, with one exception, we've pretty much only exclusively watched 70s and 80s horror up to this time. But for once, we're going to watch a big, exciting, blockbuster horror film. Next week, we're going to be analyzing The Quiet Place, or A Quiet Place. I've forgotten what the word at the beginning is.
A Quiet Place.
That one. It's quiet. There's some things. They make noises. Don't make noises, you'll get eaten, or something. I don't know.
The Jim from The Office classic. A Quiet Place.
John Krasinski's in it?
Yes. He is the main guy.
Well, that's going to be an experience.
All right. So join us next time when we look at A Quiet Place. In the meantime, this has been Scaredy Cats. I am Thomas J. Sotvet.
And I'm Vicky Sotvet.
Good night, and be cool to each other.